Hey, you guys from out of town, it's really good to see your faces and have your presence here. And I was just thinking, you know, as a church, we feel that communion with you guys, but looking into your eyes and seeing your faces and having your presence here just brings a different kind of joy. And just the communion that we have with each other. So for you guys, it's kind of maybe going to be weird because you're really catching the tail end of a conversation we've had for the last 2 months. So I'll try not to lose you guys. But for the last several weeks, we've been talking through this book here, Crucial Conversations. And really the idea is about how to engage really hard conversations, how to engage them with our hearts, things to do in them, because a lot of times in these conversations, really it brings out the worst part of us. It brings out the things in us that we don't like. And in particular, we've talked about how these conversations really are marked by three things. So opinions vary, stakes are high, and emotions run strong. Right? Opinions vary, stakes are high, and emotions run strong. And a lot of these conversations just get sprung on us in the moment, right? It's like things that just happen actually quite a bit that we don't always know how to deal with them and how to move forward with them. And so we talked about how we often think, the first time we talked about the fool's choice, how we often think we have to choose between candor and kindness, between being honest and keeping a relationship. And JJ did a great job talking how our goal is to actually strive for dialogue, to the image as being there's this pool of shared meaning that we get to feed into. And that's what we're trying to do when we have these conversations. And then we talked about what to do before we open our mouths. So we talked about how a lot of times crucial conversations are doomed before we even speak a word, and how we need to decide like what we're going to actually talk about, start thinking about ourselves and what we bring to the situation, and really interrogate the stories we tell ourselves. And then 2 weeks ago, JJ helped us learn how to look and be prepared in the midst of conversations when things go a little sideways. And in particular, talked about safety and how fear and the fears that we feel actually bring a lot of stuff, anxieties into these conversations. And talked about how we can respond a lot of times either with silence or with verbal violence. And that's kind of the two options, or both is kind of the way that we go with these. And so today we're going to wrap up this conversation and really just talk about, okay, we've done a lot of prep work. Now we're in the conversation. What do we actually do? And what do we actually say? Like, how do we actually say it? How do we have a conversation where we're being truthful, where we're being honest? Maybe we're saying something really hard that we know the other person's not going to like, but we want to maintain relationship and we don't want to kill it. So how do we do that? So today we're going to talk about that. And from the outset, I just want to say there's two critical factors that have to mark and kind of flavor our conversations. And without these two things, everything's just going to kind of go off the rails pretty quickly. We need both confidence and humility. Confidence and humility, or even a humble confidence, if you will. And by confidence, I'm meaning believing that our view, our perspective, what we have to say actually matters. And without confidence, we're either going to avoid crucial conversations or we're going to understate our views out of fear of hurting others, right? We're going to kind of ease into it and not actually say what we mean, not actually say what we feel, but we're going to understate it because we really don't have the confidence that we need to engage it. And while we don't have the power to change anyone's heart, God can, and he often uses our words to do it, right? I mean, that's what happens with the gospel, right? We can't make anyone believe the gospel, but God works through our words to change someone's heart. Like, that's how this works. And that a dead heart never comes alive without hearing the good news of Jesus from someone's lips. And so our words actually matter. And when we engage crucial conversations, we shouldn't sugarcoat our views and our opinions, but state it with confidence. So in this book, the authors, they say this: people who are skilled at dialogue have the confidence to say what needs to be said to the person who needs to hear it. They are confident that their opinions deserve to be placed in the pool of meaning that we talked about. They're also confident that they can speak openly without brutalizing others or causing undue offense. So we need confidence to flavor our conversations, but we also need humility. And without humility, our confidence actually becomes pride and arrogance, right? Humility is not thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought. It's knowing that, hey, alongside our views, the views of another person are actually valuable too. They actually matter as well. It's embracing that we might not be all-seeing and all-knowing. We need others to actually get a better perspective. We need to state our opinions confidently, knowing that our perspective is a starting point, not the end game, okay? So this humble confidence, now I just want to say this, this isn't just some psychological ideal like, hey, here's what works to get what you want in a conversation. This is actually a direct byproduct of the gospel, right? It's a byproduct of us actually seeing and knowing the heart of the Father for us, the love of God. When we actually are convinced in here that the Father loves us, has called us sons and daughters and has accepted us, that we have access to the throne of grace, we're actually able to go to other people and speak the truth and love them. To be confident, but to actually be humble because we recognize we're broken, but hey, it's okay if they reject us. Like we have a Father who loves us and who accepts us. And so humble confidence flows from who we are in the gospel, that we're far more sinful than we dared believe, but we're far more loved than we dared hoped. And so this humble confidence, even more than that, Jesus himself embodied it, right? And it made me think, as we were working through this and talking with JJ some through this, thinking of Jonathan Edwards' sermon, The Excellency of Christ, where he talks about Jesus being both lion and lamb at the same time. And he says this, he says, there meets in Jesus Christ infinite highness and infinite condescension. Christ, as he is God, is infinitely great and high above all. He's higher than the kings of the earth, for he is King of kings and Lord of lords. He's higher than the heavens and higher than the highest angels of heaven. And yet, he is one of infinite condescension. His condescension is sufficient to take notice of the most unworthy, sinful creatures, those that have no deservings and those that have infinite ill deservings. Yea, it's great enough to yield himself up to death for them. And what act of condescension can be conceived of greater? We can even see Jesus, this humble confidence in the way that he talked to his disciples, right? You have Peter who he literally, when Peter rebukes him, he doesn't lash out. He doesn't try to get Peter back, but he speaks truth and love to him, this humble confidence. He says, get behind me, Satan, right? He speaks some really hard words to him, but he goes on and he says, you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. And in that, we could hear his heart for Peter. He's not wanting to win an argument. He's wanting to win Peter's heart. And again, this has to flavor all of our conversations. And so with these two things in mind, this humble confidence, let's look a little more closely at how to have these conversations. And the authors use this acronym. They do state your path, S-T-A-T-E, to try to help you remember these tools. And five tools for having crucial conversations. And the first three describe what to do, and the last two describe how to do it. So we're just going to walk through those today. So S, first one, S, share the facts. Share the facts. So we mentioned this previously when we looked at interrogating our stories. And we talked about how there are facts and there are stories, right? Facts are the things that we can see, the things that are objectively verified. Stories are how we interpret those facts, our subjective perspective of those. And when we believe stories, it actually feeds into our emotions and it feeds into our behavior for good or for bad. And this is what the authors call our path to action. So we see and hear something, we tell ourselves a story, we feel something about it, and then we act out of it. And our goal in crucial conversations is to walk people through our path and to get them to walk through their path. So in other words, to walk through, here's what I saw, here's what I told myself out of this, here's what I felt out of this, and to get them to do the same thing. And that starts with sharing facts, starting with things that you've seen and heard or directly experienced without interpretation attached to them. So instead of coming to someone and say, hey, why are you such a jerk? Instead, it becomes, hey, we had a conversation the other day and you said this, right? We're starting with a fact, something that we can actually agree on. And really by doing this, what we're doing is we're extending an invitation to the person to come on the same side of the line, to move in the same direction. Like, we're not wanting to just attack somebody, we're wanting to work together towards something. And the facts help us go, hey, here's what happened, let's talk through this. Because I feel like maybe the way I'm seeing is not right, or maybe the way that you approached that was wrong. And rather than laying out all of our assumptions first, we start with facts in a posture of working together to resolve a problem. Now, it's important to state that we shouldn't package our stories as facts. And what I mean by that is reframing our interpretation as if it's a fact, right? We do that all the time. Like, hey, I'm just speaking the truth here. You're a jerk, or whatever it is. Like, we're like, I'm just saying facts. Like, here's how you were. And instead, we kind of repackage it. But facts don't contain accusations or insults. It's just stating what happened. It may not be everything that happened. There might be some things missing. But the facts we share should be indisputable. And we should state them in a way that we're not piling up offenses or stumbling blocks for someone to kind of agree with those things. And this is the foundation because eventually we want to share our perspective and our opinion, but we have to do the work and show them how we got there. And that's part of the problem sometimes. We don't let people see how we arrived at the conclusion we got to. And the facts is how we start and let them see, hey, that actually makes sense how you got there. Like, that actually makes sense. If we don't provide facts and we just skip to the conclusions, people are left on their own to figure out why we think what we think. And they'll probably think we're either stupid or evil. Like, that's probably what they're going to do. So sometimes, by just laying out the facts, we actually have already made significant progress. Sometimes we just do that and someone can go, oh, hey, here's something you're missing. And they add to the pool of meaning. And it resolves the situation. But a lot of times we're going to have to go a little bit further. So S is share the facts. T is tell your story. By telling your story, what I mean is you're sharing your perspective, your judgments, your conclusions. Again, if we start here, we're going to risk shutting down dialogue. And that's why we start with facts. And by sharing facts, we help frame up our story. And it helps them connect the dots to the conclusions. And so we want to lead them down our path from beginning to the end. Let them see things from your point of view. And as we've said before, your perspective might be right and your perspective might be wrong. But regardless, we want the other person to know how we got there. And when we thought through the facts that led to our story, we're much more likely to have the confidence we need to say things that are really controversial, to say things that we know are going to get a rise out of people in order to add it to the shared pool of meaning. And it may be helpful to even state that we're just sharing our own perspective, right? We talked about this of like saying, hey, I just want to tell you what I'm seeing here. And I admit this might be wrong, but here's what happened and here is how I make sense of what's going on. Can you speak to that? Again, if we're coming with confidence and humility, we're going to state what we think, but with the ultimate goal of gaining a better understanding. And so when we shift to telling our story, we got to pay close attention because this is the place where people are going to go sideways. This is the place where people are going to respond with silence or violence. When we start making accusations, when we start making judgments about the other person. And as we talked about last week, fear has taken over and safety has deteriorated. And as a reminder, safety isn't comfort. JJ did a great job talking about that. Safety is about extending our hospitality and presence to others, allowing them to be vulnerable and honest without us resorting to silence and violence back. It's allowing them to say something even controversial and giving them a hearing. And so there are a few things that we can do when we notice that they no longer feel safe to be vulnerable when they are lashing out in either silence or violence. there's a few things we can do at this point to actually bring the conversation back. And so I'm going to list out just five quick things on this, and then we'll keep going. So one, when safety seems to be kind of gone and people are responding in silence or violence, one, we shift the conversation to address safety. And what I mean by that is people are going to become defensive, not because of what we say a lot of times, but because why they think we're saying it, right? And what happens is we can get stuck in the content of just arguing the content when it's like, hey, they actually misunderstand my intention. They're thinking I'm saying this for a different reason than I am. And in those instances, there's two things. Either one, maybe they're right, and we have bad motives, and we have to address that in ourselves. But if they're not right, then we have to stop the conversation and clarify our intentions, recognizing that we're not going to make progress if we don't. So we need to shift the conversation to address safety. Second, we need to share our intentions. So here's the reality. No one can see your heart. No one can see your heart, and you can't see anyone else's heart. But we can tell them. They can hear our hearts by the way that we talk to them. They don't know that you're for them unless you tell them. Like, this is an important thing to do. It's like, it's why we actually want a culture of blessing, right? Where it's like, we don't just believe the things and keep it to ourselves, but we speak it out because it's important to hear. And so whenever it seems like someone has missed our intentions, it's important to voice what we're trying to do in the conversation. We got to push pause. So we say things like, hey, let me clarify what I'm trying to say. Or I would hate to give you the wrong impression. Or I want to remind you that we're on the same team and I want what's best for you. I love you. Like, those things are important to share, and to share as often as we need to remind the person what we're bringing into the conversation. So we need to share our intentions. Third thing, we need to apologize when appropriate. So there's times where we hurt people. There's times where we speak carelessly, or we speak in our unrighteous anger, or we make exaggerated accusations. And when that happens and people bring it to our attention, we should listen and weigh it. And if we're in the wrong, seek forgiveness. Now, it's important to recognize, because I've done this my whole life, is that apologies can be used as manipulation, right? Apologies, we don't believe we've done anything wrong. We think we just are misunderstood, but we apologize to move beyond the misunderstanding. And that's not how we respond to it, because guess what's going to happen? The same thing over and over and over again. The same thing's going to happen. And so the real issue hasn't been addressed. So in saying this, we have to apologize when appropriate, when we actually recognize there's something we've done wrong here. And if not, if someone has just misunderstood us, we should be honest and share our intentions and add to the pool of meaning. So apologize when appropriate. Four, contrast to fix misunderstandings. Again, we want them to hear our heart and intentions. And one way to do that is by what the authors call contrasting. Basically, we're saying, hey, I don't mean this, and I do mean this, right? We have a don't statement and a do statement. Here's what I'm not trying to do. Here's what I am trying to do. So for example, hey, the last thing I want to do is attack you or criticize you. That's not my intention. Instead, I want us to be able to talk about our concerns with each other and build a better relationship. We can state clearly the things, and maybe it's things that we see that they might believe about us, of like, hey, I'm not trying to attack you here. Hey, I'm not upset with you. I just want to talk about this. So we can use contrasting to fix misunderstandings. And the last thing is find mutual purpose. Last thing when safety is lost, find mutual purpose. What's a common outcome you both can be working towards? Like, what are you aiming for, the same goals? Like, it's easier to restore safety and have hard conversations when you have the same interests and values in mind. And maybe that's, hey, we both want to honor Jesus in this. Like, we both want to aim and be better followers of Jesus. Maybe it's, hey, we want to have a better relationship. Maybe, hey, we want to strive for excellence in our church. Whatever it is, and it can take work to do, but if you and the other person actually believe you're after the same thing, you probably can talk about anything. Like, you probably can. So once safety has been restored, once you've dealt with the fears and misunderstandings, then you can dive back into the conversation. So we want to share the facts. We want to tell our story. And then A is ask for others' paths. So again, we kind of share our path. Here's what we saw. Here's how we interpreted that. Like, here's what we saw. Here's how we interpreted that. And then we ask them to actually bring their story and the way they're seeing things into the conversation. And we have to actually mean it, right? We have to approach with curiosity and patience, listening carefully to the other person. We actually weigh what's being said, not just listen for arguments to attack, right? So as the authors kind of say, if your goal is to keep expanding the pool of meaning rather than to be right, to make the best decision rather than to get your way, then you'll willingly listen to others' views. And wisdom from Scripture points us in the same direction, right? I mean, just take from Proverbs 18, in verse 2, it says, "A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion," right? And then later on, verse 13, "If one gives an answer before he hears, it's his folly and shame," right? We actually need to invite others to add to the pool of meaning, to hear from them so we can make better judgments, so we can make better decisions. Now, it's not always easy, as you guys know, for others to actually open up or even know what they're feeling, to know what they saw, to know the stories that they're telling themselves. And so here's three ways you can kind of help them along as you're doing that. So first thing is to ask, right? We need to just literally ask. That's the first step in asking them to share their story. What do you think? How do you see it? What's your perspective? Can you help me to understand? Do you see things differently than me? These questions encourage others to share their perspective, their story, what they're seeing and hearing and feeling. And as they share, more information is being added to the pool of meaning. Second thing we can do is mirror. And what that means is unless they tell us, we really don't know the story people are telling themselves. But what we can see is them and their behavior, right? And so sometimes we have to step out and act like a mirror, voicing those things that we can see, right? The hope is that by pointing out the behavior, we can help them along in exploring their story. And as long as we do it calmly and respectfully. So for instance, we might say, "Hey, you say that you're okay, but the tone of your voice really sounds like you're upset. Is that right?" Right? It's inviting them to speak into it based on what we're seeing. "Hey, you really seem nervous by the way that you're carrying yourself. Can we talk about that?" So be a mirror for them. And the last thing in this, in order to help them share their path, is paraphrase, right? And this is just great for any communication. I think of the many arguments that me and my wife have gotten into where I thought I understood what she was saying and I had no clue what she was saying until I started paraphrasing, right? It's like we're arguing about stuff and we're not even like hearing each other, right? And paraphrasing is a way of, in your own words, saying what you heard. "Hey, so here's what I hear you saying," right? And sometimes here's what happens. Sometimes you say what they said rightly, but they realize that's not what they mean, right? And they need it heard back and they go, "Oh, wait, no, that's not what I mean," right? And so paraphrasing helps to just bring clarity to the conversation. So those three things. So sharing the facts, telling the story, asking for others' paths, that kind of explains the what of how these conversations can go. And the last two things focus on the how. So the second T in this is talk tentatively. Talk tentatively. So David Pallison kind of talks about this and how because we can't see the heart, again, a lot of this comes back to the fact that we're finite. We don't know what's in someone else's heart. Because we can't see the heart, our method should be one of tentativeness, right? We often think we know what's going on, right? We're like, "Hey, I have the gift of discernment. I know your heart." But the reality is we're guessing a lot of the time, right? We're just guessing. We're just putting pieces together. And the connections we're making are not always as clear as we would like to think. And again, talking tentatively is not just about manipulating people, but it flows from who we are in the gospel. Like recognizing our own brokenness, the way we twist things, our bad motivation sometimes, our limitedness, we can't see and know everything, and that we're freed by the love of God to take risks for the sake of another, to move towards them in the conversation and to be committed. And if we're setting our eyes rightly on the gospel, we're going to actually, the tentativeness is going to flow out of that. And when we tell our story and talk through these things, we should avoid inflammatory insults or provocation, because we want dialogue, right? We want dialogue. And there's a way to share even controversial conclusions without exaggerations. And so that means we should tell our story as a story and not as fact. Like we should blend humility and confidence. And again, doesn't mean we understate things. We don't need to say like, hey, I know this is probably wrong. Like you think what you think and that's okay. We should speak with humble confidence, but we're inviting them in and adding meaning to the pool. So for instance, instead of saying the fact is, we can say, hey, in my opinion, right? Instead of saying, everyone knows this, right? Or, hey, everyone's been saying this, right? That's the thing we hear all the time. Instead, we can say, I believe this, right? We're not minimizing our views. We're just saying it in a way that's actually more accurate and more tentative. The only way to do this versus, hey, I'm certain this is how we should do this, right? We're still saying it confidently, but humbly. Instead of saying, that's a stupid idea, we say, hey, I don't think that's going to work, right? Like, there's a way that we can approach this. And again, the authors, they phrase it like this. They say, one of the ironies of dialogue is that when there's a difference of opinions, the more convinced and forceful you act, the more resistant others become. Speaking in absolute and overstated terms does not increase your influence. It decreases it. The converse is also true. The more tentatively you speak, the more open people become to your opinions. Again, this is something Proverbs speaks to us, right? Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Or Proverbs 12:18, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing, right? So we should avoid overstating our convictions. We should avoid understating our convictions. Instead, speak tentatively with humble confidence. And then the last thing in here, the E, is encourage testing. Encourage testing. Again, this is how we kind of flavor asking them to share their story. When we do it, we have to mean it, and we should invite challenge to our perspective. We should actually invite testing to our perspective, right? If you have to do so in a way that makes it clear you want to hear them, even if their ideas are controversial. Otherwise, people aren't going to speak up, right? We should confidently share our opinions, but just as confidently invite others to share theirs. Again, last quote from the book, but this one was really helpful. They said, the only limit to how strongly you can express your opinion is your willingness to be equally vigorous in encouraging others to challenge it. Okay, so the only limit to how strongly you can express your opinion is your willingness to be equally vigorous in encouraging others to challenge it. So you can be really confidently, boldly stating your opinion, but encourage testing. Be like, hey, do you see it differently? Am I wrong here? And actually mean it. Not just, let me figure out if I can knock down every argument. We should invite others to challenge our views and to share their stories. And also this tests whether our motives are to win a debate or to actually engage in real dialogue. So this is the state your past, okay? So like sharing the facts, telling your story, asking others for their past, talking tentatively, and encouraging testing. And so we've gone through all of that. And last little thing before we kind of start wrapping up here. what if we still disagree, right? Because this is what happens, right? We've prepped for all of this, and then we go into these crucial conversations thinking, you know what? I got this. They're now going to believe everything that I think. It's going to be great. We're going to have this. But that rarely happens, okay? There's times where you're going to share the facts, tell your story, ask for their path. You've done it all in the right way, but at the end of the day, you still disagree. Maybe the other person's facts are wrong. Maybe their story is completely unfounded. What do you do, right? What do you do in that? So there's a lot of things you can do, but there's a couple of things that I think would help. So one, agree where you can agree. So here's something that I find that happens a lot. So like I tend to actually, in a lot of my closer relationships, get really argumentative with a lot of different things. And what tends to happen is there's times where I've argued about stuff that I agree with, right? If that makes sense. It's like, have you ever been in an argument where like 15 minutes in, you realize we actually think the same thing, but we're arguing about it, right? And sometimes it's actually like, maybe there's differences, but it's like 5 or 10% is different. And we're making a big deal out of that. And it's what they call in this book, violent agreement, right? Which makes sense to me. Like that makes sense. And so here's the point. Don't turn agreement into argument, right? Look for where you actually agree and start there, because I'm sure there are things that you can agree on. Second thing, build on the places where you agree. So while you're hearing the other person's story, maybe they left out something important. And maybe that was accidental. Maybe it was intentional because they're trying to have the best argument they can have. Either way, if we agree with the other person, but there's just some things that are missing, we can build on that agreement. So instead of, hey, you're wrong, what about this? We can say, hey, absolutely, I agree with that. In addition, I've noticed this, right? We're building on our agreement. And the last thing in this is compare when you differ. So when you disagree, again, walk your path together. Like talk through, like, here's what I saw and here is how I'm interpreting it. And sometimes that takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to work through and even asking the questions, why is that the story I'm telling out of this? You'll uncover a lot of deep things when you ask those questions. And so you know the facts and the stories they're telling themselves. When you know what the other person's bringing to the table, you can actually zero in on what the real disagreement is. Like you can actually have the real conversation without all the other things that are attached in the baggage connected to it. And so you can work together to explore and explain the differences. And maybe at the end of the day, you don't ever agree, but hopefully you can come out of the crucial conversation with a deeper understanding of the other person and maybe at least a solution of how to move forward with that. So again, this is kind of just the end of our conversation of talking through how do we frame up and have these hard conversations. And so to end our time, I'm going to send us here in a minute. There is an exercise that we're going to do. So there's going to be some papers up here on this table in front of me that actually walks through a little exercise of just working through some different scenarios. Different scenarios of like your spouse or roommate dropping hints that you're lazy, need to do more work around the house, things like that. And what I want you to do here in a minute is grab one of these papers from up here and get into groups of like three. And there's three scenarios. Pick a different one, each one of you, and you're just going to work through it. So take turns sharing what you would say in that scenario and working through the state your path thing that we just talked about. And again, it might be two sentences long, and that's great. And everyone else can kind of listen, be the observer, and give some feedback on that.